Peter B. Collins News and Comment. Wednesday, November 27, 2013, the day before Thanksgiving. This is our last News and Comment podcast until Monday, December 2nd. That's Johnette Napolitano and Concrete Blonde, and it's a song about a fantasy about a peeping Tom. Above my bed, he knew I'd understand. He was the ghost of a Texas ladies' man. That's Ghost of a Texas Ladies' Man, and we now learn that the NSA, in addition to tapping phones, intercepting email, checking your web searches, has also been collecting the details of online sexual activity of leading Islamist radicals. And this is for the purpose of blackmailing them, embarrassing them, or otherwise taking them down. And it begs the question, how low has our government sunk in its effort to spy on people and use these kinds of predictive policing techniques to prevent crimes from happening? A lot of it's a fantasy, just like the ghost of a Texas lady man. But the latest from Ed Snowden shows that the NSA has been collecting details about the online sexual activity of prominent Islamist radicals in order to undermine them. Glenn Greenwald is now publishing at the Huffington Post. This is news to me. I think that he's waiting for the new entity that he's launching with Pierre Omidyar. And I know he's getting help from Jeremy Scahill. I also know, just circumstantially, that James Bamford has been in Rio de Janeiro, where Greenwald lives. Bamford is the leading expert on the NSA, and perhaps he is part of the new Omidyar media effort that will surface probably after the first of the year. Meanwhile, at the Huffington Post, this article says that as an example of vulnerabilities, it lists viewing sexually explicit material online or using sexually persuasive language when communicating with inexperienced young girls. I don't know exactly what that would refer to. But the names of the six targeted individuals have not been released. One is listed as having been imprisoned for inciting hatred among non-Muslims, and another appears to be a U.S. person, meaning a citizen or permanent resident. And so what we've learned is that these six prominent, globally resonating foreign radicalizers have been targeted, spied upon, for the purposes of, like I say, either blackmailing them or taking them down. And it just shows that we apparently have no bottom when it comes to the standards that we use to promote American interests. And all this, of course, is done under the guise of protecting us from terrorism. But that resonates with me very similar to what J. Edgar Hoover was articulating after the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King, that he wanted to prevent the rise of a new black messiah. How did he do that? Through black bag jobs, getting compromising or incriminating information on people, and silencing them in that manner. I guess that just makes it traditional all-American, kind of like turkey at Thanksgiving, eh? Microsoft is moving toward a major new effort to encrypt its internet traffic after the revelations by Ed Snowden about the NSA being able to tap into servers worldwide. Suspicions at Microsoft have been building for several months, and they sharpened in October when it was reported that the NSA has been intercepting traffic inside the private networks of Google and Yahoo. And documents indicated that Microsoft was getting the same treatment. Now, I think this is healthy. I think we need to see a corporate pushback. And if the internet giants will adopt encryption systems that thwart the NSA, or at least slow them down, Well, that's got to be an important step forward. May not fix the problem, but I think it's something that is long overdue, particularly from Silicon Valley companies. Well, as I'm speaking to you, tomorrow is Thanksgiving. Like most Americans, I'm looking forward to gathering with family. And while the holiday is focused way too much on gorging ourselves, on gluttony, I have a lot to be thankful for. And I'd like to thank the people who listen to this podcast on a regular basis. It really validates what I do here, and it's important to get that feedback. I'm grateful for the people who subscribe, and today we'll mention Anna Gordonier, Richard Sessler, Carl Hesterberg, and Gunnar Gunderson. They're all monthly subscribers, and I very much appreciate their support. You can do it, too. I'll be brief about this. Just go to peterbcollins.com, follow the sign-up link under my picture. And for new annual subscribers, I've got the Bill Ayers memoir, just one copy remaining, of Public Enemy. So sign up while it lasts, and it can be yours, along with a bag of kick-ass Kona coffee supplied by Russ Archibald from the Big Island of Hawaii. The other way that you can help us is we have a new affiliation with audible.com. And here is a way that you can get a free audiobook, kick $15 of somebody else's money to support the Peter B. Collins podcast. I mean, it's a win-win-win situation. Audible.com features over 100,000 audiobooks, and you can play them on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, MP3 player. If you sign up today for a free 30-day trial, your first audiobook is free, and Audible.com will pay me $15 for each trial membership. This is a no-risk, no-cost way that you can kick in $15 to support this podcast and get a free audiobook in the process. There's an easy link in the show file for this podcast, or go to audibletrial.com/Peter B. Collins. No capitals or punctuation. audibletrial.com/Peter B. Collins. And I also just have to say that my heart goes out to Roger Shuler and his wife, Carol. They will not be together on Thanksgiving Day. Roger remains locked up in the Shelby County Jail in Columbiana, Alabama. He doesn't belong there. It's a miscarriage of justice, but he's fighting for his First Amendment rights as a journalist. And I don't have any new developments to report in the case today, but I hope you'll pause and think about Roger Shuler. And if you're so moved, I'll put up the address of the Shelby County Jail in the show file of this podcast, and maybe you could drop him a note and let him know you're thinking about him. Yesterday, the Supreme Court agreed to accept two cases up on appeal related to claims by Christians that Obamacare infringes on their religious freedom by imposing a requirement that insurance policies include contraception at no extra charge. And this is an extended test of the ugly decision under Citizens United, where the Supreme Court basically reconfigured the case before it so it could confer on corporations a type of personhood and, in turn, the free speech rights that individuals hold. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the court handles this. You can imagine the five Republican justices tilting to the Christian base of the Republican Party and finding some sort of religious freedom that is being infringed here. But many of these companies that now object have been paying for policies that included contraception all along. This has really just standardized. And it's also made it clear that contraception is a cost-saving healthcare service. And it's in the best interest of the nation to provide it with no barriers in the form of a cost to those who want to use contraception. Now, the law doesn't require any individual to use contraception ever. And so how this infringes on the religious freedom of, for example, Hobby Lobby, which is a chain of craft stores owned by a corporation that is family held. And the family is saying that it can enjoy the limited liability and the other protections that the corporate structure provides to the ownership, but that their religious values can flow through the corporation and be imposed on their employees. It is illogical, irrational, and it would violate the separation of church and state, I believe, if the Supreme Court finds in favor of the plaintiffs in these cases. The family that owns Hobby Lobby is the Greens. They told the justices of the appeals court that some drugs and devices that can prevent embryos from implanting in the womb are tantamount to abortion. That's their view. Now, it's not really true, but that's their view. And so they say that providing insurance coverage for those forms of contraception would make the company and its owners complicit in the practice. Now, they say they have no objection to 16 other forms of contraception, including condoms, diaphragms, sponges, and several kinds of birth control pills or sterilization surgery. So is the court going to allow religiously motivated corporate owners to say, well, we'll pay for rubbers, but we won't pay for an IUD? We'll pay for the pill, but we won't pay for the morning after pill. I mean, that would be incoherent. And my hope is that the court will find that the employer confers on an employee a benefit that is worth a certain amount of money, and that the employee should be free to choose how that money is spent, in this case, on contraception. Now, it's kind of a daydream, a pipe dream on my part, because I think it's highly unpredictable what the court will do. It's going to be very interesting. Kudos to the Obama administration. On Tuesday, they announced proposed new rules for the IRS related to nonprofits and political activity. And this is the clear outgrowth of the firestorm that erupted earlier this year when Republicans charged that conservative groups were getting special inspection and a slow process of having their applications for nonprofit 501c3s and c4s approved by the IRS office in my hometown of Cincinnati. And we later learned that all kinds of groups that had any political visibility or political intentions were given closer scrutiny and their application process was delayed by the IRS. But this became a whole witch hunt for Daryl Issa and the Republicans in the House Oversight Committee, and they tried to play it, to spin it, that this was a kind of enemies list on the part of the Obama administration. I never bought that. I don't think it was true. And so I think, given that Congress will not address these issues and clean up the confusion over political action by nonprofits, this is a very welcome move, and I am glad to see it. Steve Horn over at DSmog Blog never rests. He's got two interesting stories in the last 24 hours. One is that the Obama administration has approved a 1,900-mile proposed pipeline to transport gas from Texas through Illinois and eventually into Alberta, Canada. So this is a reverse Keystone XL pipeline. Now, it does require State Department approval because it crosses the U.S.-Canadian border. And unlike Keystone XL, Kinder Morgan's pipeline, which is called the Cochin pipeline, C-O-C-H-I-N, would carry the gas condensate diluent used to dilute the bitumen north to the tar sands. And I don't understand all the science here either, so don't feel too lost. Anyway, the decision allows Kinder Morgan Cochin LLC to proceed with a $260 million plan to reverse and expand an existing pipeline to carry 95,000 barrels a day of this condensate. And the condensate will then be mixed with the tar sands that will presumably be pushed through the Keystone XL pipeline or other routes into the United States. Now, Steve Horn also reports, following up on his exclusive disclosure of the North Dakota oil spill at Tesoro's facility, 800,000 gallons of fracked back and shale oil spilled in North Dakota in September, and Tesoro has hired the infamous contractor Whit O'Brien's to oversee its cleanup of the biggest oil spill in history. And they have a very, very spotty record. And I'll link to these two stories at DSmog blog, and you can get the details for yourself. It's very interesting. United States senators are meddling in what could be the most significant foreign policy achievement of Barack Obama's presidency. The fledgling deal with Iran over its nuclear programs, I think, is a major step forward. And now we have members of both parties in the Senate meddling with the president's efforts to move forward on a long-term arrangement with Iran. This current deal is a six-month interim accord that is supposed to buy time for a longer-range agreement. But we have the slimy senator from New Jersey, Bob Menendez, a Democrat, and Mark Kirk, Republican from Illinois, proposing a measure that would require the administration to certify every 30 days that Iran is adhering to the terms of the interim agreement and that it hasn't been involved in any act of terrorism against the United States. And without that certification, sanctions worth more than $1 billion a month would be reimposed and new sanctions would be added. Now, the president huddled with some members of the Senate, bought a little time. They're not going to introduce this until after the Thanksgiving break. And I hope they'll sit on it even longer. Because if Bob Menendez wants to meddle in foreign policy and in presidential prerogative, why doesn't he focus on the drone program of this administration that continues to infuriate people in Pakistan and Yemen and elsewhere where we fly them without any restriction? Or about the targeted killing that those drones are a part of, where the president has a video conference every Tuesday and decides who's next to die? That's something I'd like to see Bob Menendez meddle in, if that's what he wants to meddle in. But he is simply doing the bidding of AIPAC and the Israeli lobby in this country to jam up in any possible way a deal with Iran. And I have to say, the tone of the reaction that I'm hearing from the right wing in this country is just incredible. They act as if Iran already has a nuclear weapon and has threatened to blow it up in Israel. And the exaggerations, the hype, are just so thick. And it all comes from the noise machine that originates with the Netanyahu government in Israel and is amplified by AIPAC in Washington. Congratulations to Greenpeace activists who have spent quite a while in prison in Russia. They had been aboard the Arctic Sunrise, and Captain Peter Wilcox gave an interview after his release from detention. He was held in a grim concrete prison where guards showed occasional gestures of kindness, but they were subject to a brutal takedown raid by Russian commandos who took over their ship. And then they proceeded to lock all the Greenpeace activists in their cabin as they rounded up all the liquor on the ship and drank it all at once. And these Russian commandos were so drunk they were staggering around the deck of the ship. And the next day they were a little hungover. And then they took the Greenpeace activists to a jail in St. Petersburg. And after quite a few months being held, they were all but one released a couple of days ago. Can you say bunga bunga? Silvio Berlusconi, the former prime minister of Italy, has been stripped of his seat in the Italian parliament, and that ends his immunity. Now, being stripped of his seat probably doesn't matter to him. He's a billionaire, owns most of the commercial media outlets in Italy. And he's been around a few strippings over the years. That's where he got the Bunga Bunga name. He held these wild parties, and prostitutes were in attendance. Whether they serviced him or not, I don't really know. But Berlusconi is fading, and not a moment too soon. The political party of Imran Khan, the former cricket star in Pakistan, has identified a man it describes as the CIA's station chief in Pakistan. And they are outing him as a way of protesting the U.S. drone strikes that continue in that country. And while I hold no brief for the CIA, I hope that it doesn't result in the death of the CIA commander or any other things that, could make this event go sideways. In Los Angeles, just in time for Thanksgiving, there is an effort to restrict food giveaways to homeless people. Now, I consider what's going on to be fairly cold-hearted. It essentially criminalizes homelessness. And it's a NIMBY effort because this is driven by people who say, well, it's okay to feed the homeless, just don't do it in my neighborhood. Because that becomes a magnet for people that we would rather not see. There's no question it's a challenging issue. L.A. has an estimated 54,000 homeless people in the county. And that is a burden. There's no doubt about it. But as Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs has shown on many occasions, feeding the homeless is something that Jesus would have approved of. And I find it ironic and disheartening that so many of our political leaders invoke Jesus when it comes to restricting sexual activity by someone else, or making abortion impossible to get, or restricting access to contraception. But where are those Christians when people are saying, let's not feed the homeless because it just encourages them? And finally today, Pope Francis has infuriated capitalists around the world, and I heard Rush Limbaugh moaning about it briefly this morning, because the Pope has denounced the global financial system that excludes the poor, and he particularly derided trickle-down economics. In the text, Francis denounced trickle-down economic theories as unproven and naive, saying they're based on a survival-of-the-fittest mentality where the powerful feed upon the powerless, with no regard for ethics, the environment, or even God. Money must serve, not rule, said the Pope. The Pope loves everyone, rich and poor alike, but he is obliged in the name of Christ to remind all that the rich must help, respect, and promote the poor. And this is so refreshing, because in the Western world, we ignore the poor. We make them invisible. California leads the nation in the number of poor children. And yet, if you watch television, you see just people who are wealthy or playing wealthy, the Kardashians, all of that bullshit. And while I don't expect this Pope to make important doctrinal changes that I think the church should make, he's really setting a new tone. That's what I think the Pope should do. I think the Pope should provoke people to think about these issues and invoke the message of Jesus. Because if I don't really know if Jesus was God. Many people believe that. And to me, it's not significant. But I think he was a great philosopher and a man who, during his time on earth, left a very powerful message behind. And it's been selectively embraced by so many hypocrites that to hear Pope Francis talk about the true message of Jesus and ministering to the poor, it kind of made my day. Thanks for listening. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until